This is a research project on the ethics of whistleblowing. It's financed by the European Commission and the Social Security Fund of the European Commission. And the interesting thing about this project is that it's a mixed project involving a research component and also a advocacy component. So the network involves both universities, so the University of Pavia and the Université de Marseille, and also three NGOs, one of which is Blueprint for Free Speech, which is the first NGOs that was born out of Transparency International for the protection of the rights of whistleblowers. And here the idea is precisely to try to develop a new understanding of whistleblowing as part and parcel of an anti-corruption strategy. And in this sense, the kind of group we have constituted here in Europe is the first attempt at this side of the pond, as they say, to address issues of political corruption, just following the renewal of the studies in this field that was initiated at Harvard at the Edmund Safra Center for Ethics, where this new idea of institutional corruption has been developed following the lead of Dennis Thompson. The kind of project we are trying to promote here is seen as a complement to these studies that focuses on political corruption, not only in institutional dimension, but also as concerning the behavior of individual public officials. And so the two projects can actually be seen as complementary, really. The general thought from which I got started in my research is that generally we all have an intuition that the corruption of public officials and institutions is wrong. But there's not much clarity in terms of why exactly it is wrong, the sense in which we should also address a public action to counteract this kind of phenomenon. And what I'm trying to understand in my research, if there is a specific sense in which corruption is wrong in the sense of being unjust, where by questions of justice I mean fairly generally questions that involve some kind of right violation. So in what sense does political corruption involve violating rights, people's rights? A general, more standard approach to this problem looks at the kinds of violations that specific instances of political corruption entail in terms of specific rights. So, for example, cases of nepotism in the public sector may violate the right to equal employment opportunities of people when certain candidates are favored against others on the basis of some kind of familiar relation to the public official that is called upon to appoint them. From a philosophical point of view, this is a fairly disappointing kind of reply because it leaves the evaluation of political corruption to a case-by-case consideration of each instance. While the intuition that we have that there is something at least prima facie wrong with political corruption in itself. And so my question is why? What kind of wrongfulness is implied? And the guiding hypothesis of my research is that political corruption implies a specific kind of political injustice that's a form of relational injustice. So political corruption as a practice generally consists in an alteration of the logic that should underpin the relations between citizens in a rights-based system, so for example in a democracy. These relations should be informed by a logic of mutual accountability, and political corruption is an alteration of this logic of mutual accountability in the name of the agenda of a public official. In this sense, political corruption is an injustice because it violates the very status in virtue of which people hold rights in the first place. The status as people to whom a justification for the action, for political action, is owed. By abusing their power for the pursuit of their own agenda, public officials violate this kind of status that citizens have by obfuscating the logic that should should justify their action publicly. And in this sense, I think this is an injustice. And this is philosophically important, I think, but it has also interesting political implications because it requires that, first of all, we rethink the sense in which we think political corruption is wrong. So, for instance, we would go quite further from current cost-based approaches to political corruption. For instance, Transparency International, in its reports, tends to present corruption as a problem to the extent that involves social and economic costs. But sometimes this cost might not be there. In fact, in certain circumstances, corruption may even be beneficial to society, can speed up certain mechanisms and getting us closer to our goals. Nevertheless, if we understand corruption as an injustice, we will be capable of explaining why it is wrong, even in the case these costs do not materialize. It's a kind of inherent moral wrong. And this is important to understand the kind of wrongfulness of corruption and also to devise policies that are capable of addressing the specific kind of wrong in which corruption consists. That's right. I mean, there are certain issues of corruption that are standard issues and that are fairly easy to identify, typically because they involve law breaking. So bribery, embezzlement, these are all issues for which we have instruments, legal instruments to deal with them. But there are some other cases of political corruption that are nevertheless relevant, but they are more difficult to identify because they do not involve any kind of law breaking. They are relevant in terms of political corruption. Clientelism is an example. Nepotism is another example. These practices are not ruled out by law in many legal systems. Nevertheless, if we understand political corruption in the way I propose, we will be capable of describing these cases as relevant cases of political corruption and distinguish them from other cases of political misconduct, precisely because they have embedded in themselves a dimension of lack of publicity. So what is typical of cases of political corruption is that even if they are not, even in those cases in which they are not hidden, but they become public, those who perpetrate them tend to redescribe them in terms that are perceived to be generally acceptable as valid reasons for public actions. So bribes become gifts, nepotism is translated into the terms of personal trust, or even family relations, as many current cases show. This is typical of cases of corruption. And why it is relevant? Because political corruption entails abuse of power for an agenda that cannot stand public scrutiny as a legitimate reason for public action. Therefore, corrupt agents distinctively, when their action is made apparent, redescribe it in terms that try to make it more publicly acceptable. But if their genuine agenda is discovered, this text of public acceptability is doomed to fail. Therefore, anti-corruption should be capable of calling public officials to public accountability, to come forward and reveal the reasons for their actions, and on this basis being capable of correcting the logic that informs them. So a large part of what anti-corruption requires is not reducible to the punishment of to the legal punishment of corrupt officials, but is aimed at bringing to the fore the reasons that inform their actions in order to make them publicly accessible to the citizens. I would say that there's a sort of common basis that all forms of corruption share in a democracy. Then we need a separate set of consideration to characterize political corruption in other political systems. But within a democracy, I would say that as the nature of democracy rests in the idea that those who hold public power must be accountable to citizens. We have relevant cases of political corruption when this logic of accountability is disrupted for an agenda that belongs to the official and that the official could not possibly justify as a valid reason for public action. I would say that it is fairly distinctive of any form of political corruption in a democracy. Then the standards of acceptability and what counts as a valid reason for public action vary from one democracy to the other one. And so there are more mature democracies, if you wanted to put it that way, that have standards of public accountability that are more stringent, perhaps with respect to other forms. And also the threshold of social tolerability of certain forms of corruption varies greatly across different political cultures. But the challenge that I've tried to take on with my research is to try to identify the shared common moral ground that all forms of political corruption share within a democratic system. One of the most exciting things of this project for me as a philosopher is to see a sort of very tangible sense in which conceptual analysis can actually change the way in which we do policies. Because if we understand political corruption in a sufficiently nuanced manner, and especially if we concentrate on the kind of wrongfulness that political corruption is, this will have a direct impact on the kind of anti-corruption policies that the state is called upon to develop in order to target that specific source of wrongfulness that corruption entails. On the basis of my relational understanding of the injustice of political corruption, the most direct implication is that anti-corruption policies must be capable of identifying corrupt relations and bringing them to the fore. So from this point of view, an interesting anti-corruption instrument that is implied by my account is whistleblowing and the protection of whistleblowing. So there's been much research on whistleblowing, also much public discussion that went hand in hand with some public diffidence with respect to the action of whistleblowers. So Edward Snowden is the first example that comes to everyone's mind. Most of the ways in which whistleblowing has been looked at tend to look at this practice, in fact, as a kind of generous and generous gift of some heroes that decide to sacrifice their lives for in the name of justice. What I would like to try to do as a part also of a research project that I'm coordinating at the University of Pavia, where I work, is to change the way in which we look whistleblowing, not as a remedial measure that can be performed only by some kind of heroes, but as one of the good practices to counteract corruption, precisely because whistleblowing has this capacity of bringing to the fore the logic that is actually motivating certain kind of actions, and so calling public officials to public accountability. So whistleblowers promote public accountability of public officials in this sense, and they, through their action, make themselves accountable to the public in the first person. In this sense, I would regard policies of the, for the protection of whistleblowing as required by an anti-corruption strategy, in my view, and this is to change the way in which we look whistleblowing and we make policies to deal with it.